Describe that when you came back. I mean, after your second tour, what was it like personally when you came into town, walked around?
They told us in many instances, don't go into an airport with a uniform on. Don't travel in public with a uniform on. And I went to, on a campus in St. Louis to speak to the ROTC kids there. They put escorts on me to go across the campus. So it was not good. But my take on it all was that it's not the people of America. It was the media of America that demonized us, that did the things that called us baby. And I in my own personal experience, I think I had one instance on a radio thing where some doofus called me a baby killer or something. My job, of course, was to save lives. And I think that's all. I didn't get out in public that much because I was in the Army doing my job all over the world. But the people of America now, they're treating them good, but they're not doing so well in the veterans' hospitals. And my message is to all you guys, you veterans, get off your ass, go out and vote, find candidates who care about our veterans, who care about America and the future of America, and do something for God's sakes. Don't just sit around and be a veteran. Very important that we get out. And by the way, being a veteran is not all it's cracked up to be. You know that things don't work like they used to work. And you all remember that stuff they put in our food when we were young to keep us from chasing the girls? It's starting to work.
How many Vietnam veterans are there here in the audience this morning?
Quite a few.
Wow, yeah. And while we're at it, are there any Afghanistan, Iraq, or Bosnia veterans here? Helicopters in Vietnam. When people hear whoop, 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 what does that represent?
Well, for the Vietnam guy, for you guys out there, it represented everything. I mean, we took you into combat, we fed you, we brought you your mail, we took you back when you were hurt. In that terrain over there was impossible. I felt so sorry for those guys down in those jungles, in that mud, in those rice paddies, who were trying to make it from here to there. And so the helicopter pilots, I mean, we flew home at night. We had a bed, for God's sakes. We did not sleep in the mud. And so we were going to do anything and everything in our power to take care of those guys on the ground. An interesting story about a veterans hospital out in Washington State, American Lake. There's an Army airfield close to it, Gray Army Airfield. And the minders at the hospital noticed that when the veterans were out there working in the yard or doing their thing outside, anytime they heard that Huey wop, 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 they stopped everything. They looked up in the sky and they looked for that bird. And so they actually took those patients from that hospital to Gray Army Airfield so that they could touch it, walk around it, get in it, see it. And it was kind of a therapy for the Vietnam guy.
You mentioned about the number, it was mentioned in the video we saw earlier about the number of evacuees, lives probably saved, by helicopters in Vietnam. What are those numbers?
Yeah. Let me give you an example first of the work of one unit. This was my unit, the 54th, my second tour. First tour, Charles Kelly, who I hope you've all heard of, saved dust off. The second tour, we were well into the mission. In that unit, in a 9.5 month period, we were assigned 6 birds. At any one time, we had 3 flyable. We had an aircraft shot up or shot down every 4 or 5 days. The 40-man detachment, we had 26 Purple Hearts. Some of them, same guys shot more than once. In a 9.5 month period, with 3 flyable aircraft, we carried over 21,000 patients. In the whole Vietnam War, and do the numbers, and this is a story, by the way, that's never been told, and I wrote a book on it, and I'm going to be signing them over there after we get through here. But in the whole Vietnam War dust-off, the medevac people in Vietnam, the call sign was dust-off, and that's a story. But they carried almost 1 million patients, unheard of in the annals of warfare. 1 million men, women, children, enemy as well as friendly. We did not discriminate against any wounded human being, and even animals. We carried scout dogs. If they got hurt, flew some night missions to pick up scout dogs who were wounded in action, too. So 1 million human beings saved by dust-off in Vietnam. That's the part of that war that didn't fit the narrative of the media. It's the most humanitarian effort probably in any war in history, because at the same time we were fighting the communists, who were the greatest evil in the history of mankind, at the same time we were fighting them, we were building hospitals, we were vaccinating those kids, we were building roads, educating, adopting. The humanitarian effort that went on simultaneously with combat had never happened in combat before. Never. And, of course, the goal was to win the hearts and minds of those people. And I've been back three times, and I'll just tell you, when I go to Saigon, they treat me like a king. I'm not kidding you. And little kids on the street, you know how beautiful the Vietnamese people are, and especially those little children selling flowers on the street. And you kneel down to talk to them, and where would you like to go? They want to go to America, number one. France, number two. Okay, where do you want to go in America, young man? Las Vegas, for God's sakes. And so this little kid, hey, kid, who's your favorite president? Benjamin Franklin. Now, wait a minute. There was no Benjamin Franklin president. Yes, there was. The kid pulls out a $100 bill. Shows it to me. I thought, where in the hell did you get that? So, but they're wonderful people. They're an industrious people. And once communism backed off and they started the free enterprise thing there, they're prospering. Rice exports. They found gold and oil there. They are going to be very successful if the communists just leave them alone to do what every human being can do if they're left to their own devices.
You know what you just said about the industriousness and the ambition, the discipline of the South Vietnamese or the Vietnamese people. All we need to do is look at the Vietnamese communities in this country now who have emigrated here and realize how productive they are, what great parents they are, how they educate their children. They are bringing a ton of good stuff to our country coming from Vietnam. General, you mentioned Major Charles Kelly in your first tour. Who was Major Kelly and how impactful was he on you and your colleagues?
I hope you guys will read about this guy, because he was probably one of the greatest soldiers that this country has ever produced. And this is an example we take to the young people in the schools across America. We want them to know that they, too, can be heroes. You don't have to go into combat to be a hero. You can be a hero in your own communities and your schools and everything. You don't have to go into combat. Charles Kelly was one guy who made a difference. He lied to get into World War II when he was 15 years old. Now, he was a typical Irishman. He was court-martialed not once, not twice, but three times in World War II. Came out, went to Vietnam, went to flight school. When I met him, he was the only soldier that held all four of the badges, the combat medics badge, combat infantry badge, jump wings, and flight wings. And he was a hard-charging son of a gun. And he got to the unit. Very early in the war, to give you an example, in that whole year, my first year in Vietnam, and I came the same time Kelly did, we carried a total of 4,000 patients. We carried that many in a month, my second tour. So we weren't doing a lot. And the guy who ran the country in those days was a guy named Stillwell. Vinegar Joe Stillwell's son. We called him Cider Joe, but not to his face. And he wanted our aircraft. And he wanted to put portable Red Crosses on our aircraft when we had a patient, otherwise use them for ash and trash. Now just think how stupid that is. Take an ambulance and carry garbage with it and then put a Red Cross when somebody gets hurt. It was insane. And Kelly said, you ain't going to do that, General. He's a major, and Stillwell's a general. And they went toe-to-toe. And Kelly came back and told us, and he said, unless we do, we prove that we can do our job, life-saving, better than anybody else, they're going to take that resource away from us. First time since the Civil War.